The holiday season is a particularly good time to go out and see a movie, with a host of prestige pictures slated to be released in the coming weeks. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Star Wars The Last Jedi may be filling screens this week, but hot on that juggernaut's heels are a long line of excellent films about to be released in time for year-end awards qualifying and to give families a wide range of options at the Cineplex for their holiday viewing. It's coming up today. We discuss two recommended films about to be released, The Shape of Water and The Post, with frequent on-film contributor Kyle Alvarado. Good morning, Kyle.
Good morning, Chuck. Thanks for having me back.
Welcome back. We've been looking at a lot of movies, but these normally we review movies that are already out, but today we're talking about movies that come out this coming week and two really good movies. Let's start with The Shape of Water.
All right. So Guillermo del Toro's latest film, The Shape of Water, is a return to form and then some for the famed Mexican auteur. You know, at its core, the film is a romance. It centers on the relationship that forms between a mute laboratory janitor, played by Sally Hawkins, she plays it with grace and aching humanity, and a creature stored at that lab who is billed only as the amphibian man. He's played by frequent Del Toro collaborator Doug Jones in a true romantic lead. The film also stars Richard Jenkins, Octavia Spencer, Michael Stuhlbarg, and Michael Shannon. In the supporting roles, they're all spectacular, but Jenkins, who he plays Giles, he's a disgraced artist and Eliza's best friend, and Shannon, who is a G-man with some really dark and disturbing impulses, stand out with their layered and nuanced performances. Even though this film is a romance, Del Toro shifts genres, often many times within a single scene. One moment the film is a swooning romance, then it'll shift into a Cold War thriller, and then a horror film, and then back to a romance. He shifts gears into a few other genres, but to discuss them here might ruin the surprise. It's a feat for him to pull off that many switches in a single film without ever losing his audience or, you know, at least in my case, eliciting eye rolls. Ever the cinephile, Del Toro drops loving references to classic films. From the obvious, you can find references to Creature from the Black Lagoon, Hello Frisco Hello, and The Story of Ruth, to slightly more coded nods to The Red Shoes and Andrei Tarkovsky's The Mirror. These layered references make repeat viewings of the film a treat as you track down the eggs he placed throughout the runtime. Also, these repeat viewings allow you to really soak in the beautiful art direction, cinematography, and the score by Alexandre Desplat. It's worth noting that Jones' amphibian man is also a practical creature. What you see on the screen is Jones in a suit. There were some minor digital effects that were used, but Del Toro did as much in-camera work as possible, and the end result is spectacular and real when you compare it to motion-captured digital counterparts of current films. Of his English language features, The Shape of Water is Del Toro's most absorbing, affecting, and beautiful. The performances by Hawkins and Jones are wholly believable, and you'll never once ask yourself, am I really watching a love story between a woman and a fish creature man thing? You'll instead find yourself rooting for them until the very end. The film is currently in limited release, but it'll expand next week. What'd you think about it, Chuck?
Oh, I second all of that. I absolutely think it's Guillermo del Toro's best film since Pan's Labyrinth, which when that film came out, people were thinking that it marked a real shift in his career, and then he'd gone back to straight genre films. But as you say, there's so many genres he's working with here, and he is that rare magician that can take genre filmmaking and elevate it to a new level. So it's really exciting to see for people like us who grew up watching a lot of genre films.
Yeah.
Something this polished and just so beautifully layered. There are so many details, as you mentioned, the production design is, you can just watch the movie once just to take in all of the details he packs this film with. And that's just in addition to the incredible supporting cast that he's assembled here.
Oh, yeah. So here's one thing that's kind of shocking. You know, when you look at the film, the production values, you would assume that the budget is, you know, north of $100 million. Mm-hmm. This thing was shot for $19.5 million.
That's incredible. It's really incredible. And when you break the film down, there's only a handful of sets, really.
Yeah.
There is some really great special effects in the film, but not overwhelmingly so. There are a few very slight moments that I'm still unresolved about, but so much with this film goes right that, and apparently other critics have agreed. Our own Critics' Choice Awards has nominated it with 14 nominations. So it seems to be resonating with a lot of critics, and I think it's going to do great at the box office. Highly recommend. It is rated R. We should point out.
Hard R.
You might not get that from the trailers.
Yeah.
But if families are thinking about going to see this, it does have some mature subject matter. I was really taken with so many of the themes going on, too. This is another film this year that is a period piece. It's set around 1960. Mm-hmm. late 50s, early 60s, but it's filled with thoughts about today, our inability to communicate with one another, the aloneness that so many of these characters feel and how it drives them. And I love the notion that, I don't think it's giving anything away because the trailer gives a lot of this away, that a mute, a gay man, a black janitor, and a communist agent all work together to save this really beautiful thing.
Yeah. There's something about about how the representation of a lot of these sort of marginalized groups are mm-hmm. really put in the spotlight.
I'm glad you mentioned Creature from the Black Lagoon, because Jack Arnold, the great director of 50s sci-fi films at Universal, is certainly a touchstone for this film, not just Creature from the Black Lagoon, but his follow-up, Revenge of the Creature, which is about a woman alone in a man's world, and the study of this creature and how they have a certain simpatico-ness because of their differentness to their environment. And he's certainly winking to that. But also, I think he's learned from Jack Arnold. If you go back and look at so many of those 50s Universal sci-fi films, the ones by Jack Arnold, there's so much humanism in those films that also he was elevating what could be these really low-budget science fiction films into something much bigger. And that's exactly what Guillermo del Toro has pulled off here.
One last thing of note with this film is that one of the criticisms against Pan's Labyrinth of that is that it's an unbearably sad film. This one isn't at all. It's actually kind of shocking for del Toro to do something that is, quite frankly, a very hopeful film.
Certainly falls more on the fable category of film. So we're going to follow this up with The Post, a very different film, but also about a woman in a man's world and a bit of a fish out of water tale. Steven Spielberg's engrossing film about the rise of the Washington Post in the early 1970s to become one of the country's leading investigative journalism newspapers is perfectly timed for our current era. The drama is driven by the leak of the 47-volume study of the war in Vietnam, which became known as the Pentagon Papers, and the decision of whether to publish its contents. The Pentagon Papers were classified top secret and revealed a long-held understanding that the war could not be won, a sharp contrast to the public pronouncements of multiple presidential administrations. Its leak and the government's legal challenges attempting to block publication of the report's findings are more than enough to fill a movie. But Spielberg and his screenwriters are interested in far more here. At the heart of The Post is the intersection of three interconnected stories with long-reaching impact on the nation: the Pentagon Papers themselves, the evolving story of the Washington Post's publisher, Katharine Graham, and the work of Ben Bradley, the Post's editor-in-chief, who builds his reporter pool into an investigative journalism powerhouse. Graham is played by Meryl Streep, Bradley by Tom Hanks. In constructing The Post, Spielberg understands our own understanding of the parallels between our current moment and the history of the early 1970s, and he fills The Post with nuance rather than pyrotechnics. The Post is the work of a master director becoming more and more comfortable with small moments. Spielberg seems to be moving away from the big cinema expressions that confirmed his prowess earlier in his career and is just as thrilling to watch. When Meryl Streep's publisher finally decides to print the story that may jeopardize her paper and her family's legacy, it's a deceptively simple moment. Surrounded by men of differing opinions, she reticently speaks a few words and then goes to bed. Hanks, for his part as legendary Post editor Ben Bradley, turns in one of his best performances in years with the simplest of movements and props, often sitting at a desk, strolling the newsroom, or talking on a phone. Streep and Hanks seem to push each other in their restrained characterizations, and the film rewards multiple viewings just to watch these two actors' faces. There is a rightness to the tone of The Post that works its magic. History rarely feels historic when it's being made, and The Post captures the little moments of courage and circumstance that combine to resonate with seismic magnitude. Indeed, when the film is winding up and the newspaper's presses are finally started, the entire building and the world vibrates. I really liked this movie.
I did too. I thought it was fantastic.
Spielberg is, it's been fascinating to watch his evolution the last decade as he chooses much more historical material to work with now.
Yeah, he's more engaged with it as a filmmaker. And you know, the interesting thing about this film was that basically while they were waiting for the effects for Ready Player One to render, he made this film in a couple of months. I think it was shot right around the time of Trump's inauguration, and it was released, and it's releasing now. It's insane for any director to get this type of film that quickly.
And we should mention it was written in the run-up to the last presidential election by a first-time screenwriter, Liz Hanna, who was astonished to get this optioned.
Yeah.
And find out that Steven Spielberg, Tom Hanks, and Meryl Streep were making her first screenplay into a movie. She was assisted, and the screenplay was polished by Josh Singer, who won an Oscar for his journalism film Spotlight. Mm-hmm. So it's in line with that. But it ends, you know, this takes place just before Watergate, and there is a nod to that at the tail end of the film. But what's fascinating is how Spielberg constructs this film, really showing us the background to a film like All the President's Men.
Yeah.
And I kept thinking all along, you know, the choices that are being made along are setting up the circumstances that would allow the Washington Post at the time, thinking the Pentagon Papers was the biggest story they had, to then go on and uncover the Watergate scandal. It's a fascinating piece of history, and one that he certainly understands the resonance with today's attacks on the media by our own administration.
Yeah. Sometimes the writing feels as if they're just kind of looking at the camera and saying, this is why we need a free and independent press. And some people might read it as heavy-handed, but I think
I thought it was very subtle, actually.
Yeah.
And it really acknowledged that the viewers understand the connection. They don't have to belabor it.
Yeah.
At least in my view.
One of the things that I enjoyed about this film more than anything is that it'll get compared to All the President's Men, which is it's a procedural film.
Yeah.
This one, more than anything, I feel like it's framed like a business drama, because you see Kay Graham wrestling with the implications of publishing these papers and sort of the weight she carries on it.
And it's also about her finding her strength, her inner strength, and her place in a man's world. Every scene is her surrounded by men in rooms.
Yeah.
And she's marginalized, she's talked over, and she is the owner and publisher of the Washington Post. And to watch Meryl Streep begin in this shrinking way as she's in these board meetings and then finally find her voice and strength to make a huge decision that could impact the future of her paper
Definitely
is really thrilling.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely her best performance in years, and it's saying something when you compare it to everything else, but there's a true arc to her character, and you really believe it.
A lot of films coming out the next few weeks. Anything you're particularly excited about?
It's already out, actually. There's a film directed by Dee Rees on Netflix that came out a couple weeks ago called Mudbound. It's a post-World War II drama set in Mississippi. It has a fantastic cast led by Jason Clarke and Carey Mulligan. But Mary J. Blige, in the supporting role, really steals the film with her powerful, quiet, still performance.
Fantastic. Lots to see. Good time to be a cinephile. Always nice to chat movies with you, Kyle. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Today's guest has been frequent on film contributor Kyle Alvarado. We've been discussing two new films being released this week, Guillermo del Toro's Cold War fable and beautiful creature feature, The Shape of Water, and Steven Spielberg's historical drama, The Post, starring Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks. Both films will open in theaters this week. On Film's engineer and editor is Lauren Tarasas, who, I might add, just graduated today with a degree in organizational communication. So congratulations, Lauren. An archive of past programs is available online at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.